Welcome, Action fans, and thanks for joining us for another edition of All 90s Action All the Time, as we continue our journey through Sylvester Stallone's 90s back catalogue. I'm your host, Scott Murphy, and on today's episode, we are looking at the comic book calamity that is Judge Dredd. As always, alongside me to detect this particular outing is Bloodhound Pick's co-host, screenwriter, and a man who would never betray the law. It's Mr. Craig Drahan.
I knew you would say that.
And I knew you would say that. So as always, before diving into this one, a little bit of background information for you. Judge Dredd debuted in U.S. theaters on June 30th, 1995. It was directed by Danny Cannon, who would go on to direct I Still Know What You Did Last Summer, but has basically carved a niche for himself, mainly in TV. Post that, he did episodes of CSI. He was a producer and director on Gotham and Pennyworth, and done other TV stuff. The story was by Michael DeLuca, who is now the chairman of MGM and had previously written scripts for Freddy's Dead, not so good, but also In the Mouth of Madness, so pretty good. And the other person who's credited for the story is William Wisher Jr., who co-wrote Terminator 2 and It Chapter 1, whereas the screenplay was credited to William Wisher Jr. again and Stephen E. D'Souza, who had written such action hits, or co-wrote such action hits as 48 Hours, Commando, and Die Hard. Although this movie was made in 1995, and Stephen E. D'Souza, boy, did he have a fucking year in 1994. So he wrote Beverly Hills Cop 3, co-wrote The Flintstones, and wrote and directed the Street Fighter film. Whoosh, that was a 1994 to forget. Yeah. In terms of reviews, this movie is currently sitting at a 5.6 out of 10 on IMDb, 20% on Rotten Tomatoes based on 54 reviews. It doesn't have a Metacritic score, and it's got a 2.4 on Letterboxd. And it didn't fare that much better at the box office, although it did end up making a total of $113.5 million, but that was on an $85 million budget, so was a loser for the studio. And in its opening US weekend, rather embarrassingly, it was even beaten out by Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, the movie. So there you go. So Craig, when did you first see this one?
I probably saw it when it first came out. So I am a big comic book fan. My brother, who's much older than me, he had I can't remember the comic now, it was like a stray issue of Judge Dredd that I read constantly until it fell apart, reread. But where I grew up, and even in the States, that Judge Dredd wasn't really that big at all. I think it was one of those ones where you'd have to go into like a very, specific comic shop in the major city, and you couldn't really find it anywhere else. So besides that single issue, I really only knew about, watching the movie, and I liked the movie, and I know we talked about this prior because you're asking how I could be a fan of Judge Dredd the comic and like the movie so much when I was younger. I think, especially watching it now, I realized it wasn't necessary because I always had an issue with the plot and many elements, but it was just the world, I think, and the production design. And something about, I was like, it just, obviously I wouldn't want to live in Mega City 1, but I just love the world so much, and that's why.
It does look cool. And like, even as, I think, like, I was more disappointed with it as a kid, just because I read the comic book first. So, like, it was one of those things where, I mean, I think I didn't see it at the cinema, so because we didn't go to the cinema all that often. Mm-hmm. So I think I must have saw it either when it came out on video, or I might have even seen it like a few years later when it was on telly. And then, by that stage, I'd already been reading the comic book for a while. And I didn't hate it. I know, and I watched it a few times, and I thought the world was cool, and even as a kid, I thought like some of the action was cool. Probably, you know, as a kid, thought some of the action was cooler than I necessarily do now.
Yeah.
I like that element. I think like what disappointed me is because like I was like a big fan of Judge Dredd, and I was a big fan of Stallone, so I thought this was going to be like, yeah. But then I suppose like having that background of reading the comics. And like at one point I was like a subscriber to the Judge Dredd magazine, like, you know, get like monthly, you know, a thing. And I suppose like the characters just didn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
Like, of like the character that I'd read. And then it was like this character on screen, I was just like, it didn't feel the same. So it was like, cause I just remember it kind of being a little bit of a disappointment. There were certain things in the 90s. I would rank it alongside it. I wouldn't put it quite as high up as episode one, but I'd certainly say, like, you know, of things that kind of disappointed me in my childhood, there was like the Doctor Who TV movie in 96, which was a bit of a letdown. And this was a little bit of a letdown. 98 Godzilla, that was a letdown.
Oh, yeah.
And episode one, they're amongst the kind of 90s letdowns from my childhood.
Your Rosebud. That's what you'll have. That'll be your Rosebud as your a list of these movies.
Things that let me down as a kid. Yeah. That I was really excited for.
No, and I agree. And I think watching it for this, because I haven't seen it now in several years a while, but
I haven't seen it since like my early 20s or like maybe even my late teens or early 20s. So we're talking probably nearly, you're talking at least 15 years, if not more.
But so watching it, I'm like, well, if they did it right, Stallone wouldn't be a bad Dredd if Stallone was willing to actually go, that place. It's like on paper it could work. That's what it feels like. It just, you know, it doesn't, obviously, because Dredd doesn't require, I mean I love the 2020 or the 2012 one, but the character of Dredd itself doesn't actually require, I think, you know, a substantial acting chops or all this sort of stuff.
No,
but it is commitment to that role.
Yeah, you have to commit to it. I think that's what it is, like, basically. And I think Carl Urban does a really good job of that in Dredd, the 2012. But no, I don't think it requires to be, you know, you don't have to be fucking Robert De Niro to play Judge Dredd. You just have to be committed to that character. You just, like, because, like, you know, I don't think that, I mean, I suppose he's had the odd role that, you know, like, he has a bit, stretched himself a bit. But, like, for example, Clint Eastwood tends to play Clint Eastwood, right?
Yeah.
And that's essentially that kind of blank, emotionless, slightly surly, kind of alwaysly, simmeringly pissed off the thing that Clint Eastwood does as Dirty Harry or as the man with no name, you know, in like the Dawes trilogy and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's essentially the energy of, you know, you should be given out as Judge Dredd, you know?
And you could just tell that, especially more so even now, and for people or fans of the comic books, that, you know, obviously it is Hollywoodized in a way, and that, you know, I know in the States it's hard for us to, because Judge Dredd in the comics, especially if you read what there's, like the issue America or stuff like that, he is essentially, even though he's the protagonist, is a working for a fascist government.
Correct.
You know, and there is that satire to it and all of that. But there's so much within this movie where it's like, no, we need to really show he is the
hero.
That the law is in their world is a good thing. And like, it's just all these bad criminals. And I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah, it is. It is interesting.
It flips the whole, I guess, the intention of the original, the original comic.
And I think there's a thing here as well where, like, obviously, well, this is the first time we've covered a comic book movie, so maybe we should talk a little bit about like comic book movies in the 90s, not too much, because we need we really need to get into the plot of the movie at some point. And this is your official spoiler warning. We are going to go fully into the whole plot of the movie, spoilers and all. So if you've not seen the movie, you don't want it spoiled, then go watch the movie, come back, listen to this. We are going to fully explore all of Judge Dredd after these messages. No, yeah. Let's... so this is the first time we talked about a comic book movie on the podcast. Maybe to talk just very briefly on that. So at this time, Hollywood obviously didn't take comic book movies seriously at all and just thought they were kind of stupid and made them in that vein. And there's a clear kind of like talking down to the audience.
Yeah.
Just being like kind of, well, these are just silly things. Why would anybody care anyway? And, you know, because obviously buying up rights to comic strips and comic books became, you know, there was a kind of boom of that, given the success of 1989 Batman. And then, you know, you get this kind of whole spate of comic book adaptations, big money comic book adaptations, nearly all of which totally fail, mainly because the creatives behind it don't care about it and don't understand it. But then, you know, you've got things like Dick Tracy and The Rocketeer and The Shadow and, a whole bunch of other films,
you know?
And then the year after this, you would get like, Barbed Wire. And, I tell you what, in terms of like bad movies that I did enjoy as a kid, the year after this, 1996, you'd also get The Phantom, which genuinely entertained me as a child. Yeah. I've not watched it in years and years. It's probably terrible. I know. I had a soft spot for The Phantom.
I always give credit to, especially because I love Demon Knight so much, to Billy Zane.
Yeah.
Like he commits to it.
He really does. He really, like, he does know exactly what movie he's in. And he really does commit to that role. And then I think, like, that's a movie that has a very committed, very consistent tone, even if it is a bad movie.
Yeah.
But we're not here to talk about that. And, but also in 1995, you also had Tank Girl, which I do have a soft spot for. And it was a year for campy comic book movies because also we had Batman Forever, which is a movie we will talk about at a later date.
Yeah.
But is there anything you wanted to say about that kind of 90s comic book boom before we kind of move into breaking down the plot of this one?
No, I mean, I think you covered it all. Yeah, I mean, at the end of the 90s, you would get, that would kind of be the middle ground, I feel like, with Blade, where it was, took the creative freedom, it was kind of campy in a way, but then it also did earn enough money, which, you know, they always will talk about how Blade led to the success then of, like, then Spider-Man, which then set off the whole, what we have today, basically.
Yeah, I think like it blazed the path for X-Men in 2000.
Yeah.
And then you get Spider-Man in 2002 that kind of, and I suppose even at that stage, like comic book movies aren't necessarily taken seriously, but at least like the kind of directors behind them have a better idea of the tone and, you know, have more love for the source material and stuff like that. So like it is done with more kind of heart and stuff, and and it gets better. And then I suppose eventually leads up to, you know, the year of 2008, where like Hollywood starts taking comic books movies really seriously. Cause then that's the year you get both The Dark Knight and Iron Man, the first installment in the MCU. And then it's, you know, obviously, comic book movies now rule the world. But it wasn't like that in the 90s. Blade was the one that kind of was the course corrector, because most of the 90s comic book adaptations that you got were terrible. There's only like really a handful of good ones in the 90s. You've got I do have a soft spot for Batman Forever and Tank Girl, but in terms of like really good films, you've got Batman Returns, you've got The Crow, you've got Well, Darkman's actually not based on a comic book, but it's like basically Sam Raimi like couldn't get the rights to do The Shadow, so made Darkman. So I suppose we could throw that in there. And then you've got Blade. And then you've just got all the other ones.
Yeah. Like 1990's The Punisher. I think it was the Deadly 90.
I can't remember. Was that 90 or was that 89?
Oh,
I think it's like listed as 89. And maybe it didn't come
out. Dolph Lundgren, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. It was. Yeah, it was 89.
89. So yeah. Dolph Lundgren. There's still not been a good Punisher movie. Like, because like there's the Thomas Jane one was not good, and then there's the Punisher Warzone, which I hated. So like,
which that one is a throwback. I actually watched the whole behind the scenes and everything because I found it for
Punisher Warzone.
Yeah, for $1 the Blu-ray at like 7-Eleven.
Good times.
Yeah, she talked about she wanted to make it like the ultra violent version of like the Dick Tracy movie. So just like very hyper stylized comic book, I guess.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. It just wasn't just wasn't a fan. Before I delve any more into Punisher Warzone and the lack of good Punisher films. Let's get into it now. Let's talk about Judge Dredd, which was made by Hollywood Pictures or Disney in disguise.
Yeah, which would explain a lot of stuff about why it is the way it is.
Yeah, apparently it was like a subsidiary they had that made like kind of R-rated movies, like the R-rated movies. Actually, Hollywood Pictures did make some good films, you know, like in their time, you know, they made films like Dead Presidents. That was a movie that came out in 1995. That was a good film. Another movie that came out in 1995 is a good film. Crimson Tide made that one.
Okay.
Got some other good ones in the repertoire. Anyway, how does Judge Dredd begin?
This, I think, is our first opening like this, maybe so far, where, and I haven't seen it in a while, where you get the scrolling of the, basically the exposition of the world building, but then somebody's reading it as well.
Not anybody's reading it, though. Not any old buddy. It's our good old friend, James Earl Jones. What a voice that man has.
And talking about how, you know, with the world changed and everything kind of became with the climate and became a scorched earth, except a few kind of mega cities in the country or even around the world. And then it goes into how law like went out the window and it all went to crap. And so they had to bring in a new type of lawmaker, somebody that was judge, jury, and executioner. And that's basically all it is. And then it sets us up for, you see this ship flying from kind of this wasteland into this very elaborate like wall. And then they, you know, are docking, which we're learning are like a bunch of prisoners that have been, I guess, released from their sentence.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was going to say that, like, I don't know if it was just because it had that opening scroll and then, you know, like, it was James Earl Jones, but it felt quite Star Wars. Like,
yeah.
Just that way when it's like that ship's docking and the guy who greets the ship kind of looks like a kind of Mandalorian. And I'm like, this feels very... I don't remember it being quite this Star Wars, this opening.
Well, even the special, which will pop up later, not the judges, but like the special units, they almost have, even though they're in all black, they almost have like a stormtrooper-y element to it, or something. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
But that's where we get to the first kind of character we're introduced is not Judge Dredd or any of them, but good old Rob Schneider. Who we almost follow as like a protagonist for a bit until he just disappears for many minutes of the movie.
Yes, so he is the person who kind of introduces us to Megacity One, and because you know they go through the big metal doors, and then we arrive in Megacity One, and we kind of see Megacity One through his eyes. Oh, he is returning because he's kind of like home. So he's returning back to it, but he's looking at it with wonder, and then he gets a cab ride, which, you know, even though this movie was made like 2 years before, but again, it's just, it all feels like all these kind of sci-fi things all mixed together, because like the cabs, they look like from Fifth Element, but yeah. You know, like maybe Fifth Element nicked it from this movie, because like I said, Fifth Element came out in 97.
Yeah. Which I know, well, Fifth Element, didn't they take from that comic book, The Inkle?
The Inkow? They took a lot from that to the point where I think like Jodorowsky tried to sue them.
Yeah.
And you know, any listeners, definitely you should, if you are a fan of action movies and comic books, definitely check out The Inkow, because it's a great comic book. It's very surreal, and yeah, I highly recommend that.
And it's kind of the basis for a ton of sci-fi now.
Yeah, loads of shit.
Yeah. But yeah, so we get, this is kind of where we get, which I know we were talking about before, there's like the world that they set up, there's the satire in it. And you start to see it where what it's called, heaven. I can't remember the place he's supposed to be living is, heaven's
heavenly heights.
Yeah. And he thinks, you know, he flies over this very luxurious pool that's really high up. He thinks that's it, but then it starts kind of dropping down. And, you know, even the computer itself is saying, be careful, you know, riots, and you have to be, yeah. Just kind of warning, because they're going in, the lower you go, the worse the city gets, and the more slum-like and the more crime-ridden everything is. And yeah, there's all these moments until, you know, obviously until Dredd shows up, that have these, you know, where you think, okay, you know the comic book at least enough to, you're kind of adding it in a little bit.
But. Well, this is the thing, like, I mean, according to everything I've read about the movie, is Danny Cannon, who was the director of the film, he is British. He was a fan of the comic book, apparently, you know, like in the kind of little making of documentary that you can watch on YouTube, which is called Stallone's Law. like he says in that, like he was a fan of the comic book when he was like 10 years old. And, but you know, it had a lot of production issues, and there was a lot of butting heads between director and star, particularly when it came to tone. And, and it seems like by the time it went into post, like he was pretty much shut out of the edit, like the director, Danny Cannon. And, I think, Stallone had a good amount of say in the final cut of the movie. And, so I don't know. I don't know if there's like, obviously Danny Cannon wanted to do some stuff that didn't make it in the movie at all. Apparently there is a different cut of the movie, the Cannon cut, that is darker and has more violence, and some of the abrupt edits later on in the movie are explained by the fact that there is this more violent cut. And I don't know, and again, I do not know enough details on that cut, if it is more satirical or if it's just basically this movie but with bloodier. You know, like, so I don't know.
We'll start a whole petition, release the
Cannon cut. Well, yeah, apparently, because apparently this film was submitted to the what's your one, the MPAA,
that's right. Yep.
Yeah, apparently it was submitted to them 5 times because they kept giving it an NC-17. So 4 times they gave it an NC-17. And then, it was eventually cut down enough that they gave it an R rating. So clearly the original cut is way more violent.
Yeah.
But yes, I don't know if the story makes more sense or if it doesn't feel quite as jumbled or it has that more satirical tone, but that's all I know, that obviously that cut's way more violent.
Okay. And which would have been fun. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of night and day when he arrives. But I know first off, we get him with Rob Schneider, basically
playing Fergie.
Yeah, Fergie. And then, you know, seeing this riot and making the jokes and that. Well, at least it's better than prison. And then going up to his new housing area, his apartment, but it is being occupied by a whole gang. Which one of the leader of them is
James Remar?
Yep, there we go. Yep.
Who played Ajax in the Warriors?
Yeah,
amongst other loads of other things. Like he always plays kind of either psychotic characters or slimy characters, or like I don't know. Like some actors just have those faces, and you just see James Remar's face on screen, and you're just like, ugh. Sneezy. he goes uncredited in this. Like he's not credited.
Oh. Yeah, I wonder if he did it because it feels like more of a cameo thing than a.
Yeah.
Owed somebody a favor or was doing somebody a favor.
But yeah, so Fergie basically gets lassoed into this gang.
Yeah, that are just firing on the crowd in the street, and they're having a turf war.
A block war.
Yeah, block war, and then. You know, he obviously doesn't want to be there, and he keeps trying to get out of it, but they keep either grabbing him and pulling him back in, things like that. And then 2 judges arrive, a rookie, and then Hershey, who...
Played by Diane Lane.
Yep. And they're taking cover because there's all this fire upon them, and then that's when we finally, they call for assistance, and then
I did... Yeah. I laughed at this, but because I was just like, it's just such a random joke of just being like, so she calls, George Hershey calls in for backup on the corner of Abbott and Costello. And I was like, okay.
Yeah. See, and that's when it has like that moment. And there's even a moment where it's, you have the computer talking about the violence, and then there's the robot going by talking about please eat recycled food, you know, and things like that. So you can kind of see these little hints of
satire. Yes, I did. The robot says please eat recycled food, it's good for the environment and it's okay for you.
Yeah. You're like, oh, you know, so it has this whole opening of, wow, there's something here. The war, and even for today's stand, I rented the Blu-ray, but I watched it and I was like, well, you know, for 95, the production design and even some of the CGI stuff looks pretty good.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, yeah. It had a pretty big budget.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, $85 million in 95. I mean, I was looking up kind of budgets of movies of that time. And there's only like a couple of movies in 95 that were made for like more money.
Yeah.
Like, so you had Die Hard with a Vengeance apparently had a budget of $90 million. Batman Forever had a budget of $100 million. And then Waterworld broke the world record with its $175 million budget that year. So there's like 3 other movies that year that had bigger budgets. So and apparently it took like a year to make Mega City 1 in Shepperton Studios in, you know, like in England.
Yeah. No, there's no talking down on that. The production designers, everybody, it's one of those movies that we've had in a lot of, like, or one of those conversations we've had with a lot of Stallone films of being like, you know, this part is really good. Like the whoever's doing the sound or the production or, you know, the technical people.
Yes. Like, so big shout out to production designer Nigel Phelps, who did the production design on this movie, because he nails it.
Yeah. But then we get basically a complete, you can really feel it, the tonal shift right when Judge Dredd arrives. You know, it's trying to not show his face, and, you know, he's not even that grizzled, I guess, as you would expect, or, you know, serious. He's just kind of talking down to Hershey, saying, well, these bullets have a range of 200 yards and we're 300 yards away or something like that. So why are you even taking cover? And, you know.
Yeah. Because, I suppose, like, we should mention that the way he is introduced is, like, with a stereotypical action movie hero shot. So we get, like, and it's a real loving shot of him, you know. So we get a shot of the motorbike, the, what are they called again? Lawmasters? Is that the guns?
Yeah.
The Lawmasters, the bikes.
Yeah, I think that's what they're called.
Yeah, because the guns are the law givers. So the bikes are the Lawmasters. So, like, yeah, we get a shot of the Lawmaster. He parks up. And then we get a shot of his boots, and then we like camera scan pans all the way up to his helmet, which he currently has on. So epic hero shot too. And then of course it is the first time where he says, a lot of, and also like it is the first time we get his apparent catchphrase. I knew you would say that.
because that's what it feels like in this whole movie, is they're like, catchphrases are big right now. So there's that one, there's I knew you'd say that, there's I am the law, and then there's
Court's adjourned.
Yeah, where they set it up like it's supposed to, it's like, this will go perfectly on the t-shirts or on the action figures. When you press the, you know, the button, they can say that.
Yeah. And this is part of my problem with, like, Stallone's performance, is just that Dredd just isn't this.
Yeah.
Dredd isn't James Bond. He's not quippy. He's, like, you know, what makes Judge Dredd funny is his extreme lack of humor.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that he has no sense of humor, the fact that he is completely buttoned down, the fact that he is just kind of this grizzled kind of, you know, like, and he has no emotion, like, that sometimes comes across as funny. And, like, it just, there's lots of comedy within the Judge Dredd world, but it's just not the comedy that you find in this movie. And it's not even like other, you know, it's not like the other characters are not over the top. There's plenty of over-the-top characters within the Judge Dredd universe, but Dredd isn't one of them.
Yeah, which is interesting because based on what we've talked about with other Stallone movies, and you have all these over-the-top people, and he's the one that's, like, playing it down or almost phoning it in. It's like, here was his opportunity to, like, you know, to almost, you could just play into, you're given it. Like, here's, you just have to play into what you've already been doing in these other movies, just maybe a little bit more, and then, you know, it'll be fine. Like, it'd be a fine film, at least, you know, as much as it can be.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's other problems with the script and
many
stuff
other
like that. But, you know, like, but yeah, at least Dredd would kind of make sense, you know, if he kind of more, but yeah, he decides to, this is the movie he decides to ham it up. Which feels completely wrong for the guy. And usually, you know, I'm quite entertained by, like, you know, having my hero, hammy hero, hammy villain. It doesn't bother me. But, like, in this particular case, it just doesn't make sense to the character. And maybe that just does come from the perspective of being a fan of the comics and knowing that character. And maybe that doesn't feel as egregious to other people. But, it never really sat well with me, and rewatching it still doesn't sit well with me.
Well, and that was because Diane Lane throughout it will make some comments about him being human or showing signs of humanity or a bunch of stuff in regards to that. And for me watching it, especially this time, it's like, well, he has been showing emotion. Like, it's not like, you know, I guess, you know, the comic books like we've talked about, or even the Carl Urban version.
Yeah. I think he plays the character right, because that character, yeah. You know, he does play it like the man with no name, you know, like, yeah. he does play it with this lack of emotion, and that does come across funny sometimes, you know, because it's such a lack of emotion, such a void of emotion. But like, yeah, like, he's super emotional. Like, yeah. Most of, like, you know, most of the movie, like, he's like, angry in a really pissy way. He's people keep saying like what a lack of emotion he has, and you know, he should show more emotion, and I'm like, he's showing lots of emotion. He's emotions all over the place here, you know. He just because he's kind of growling things doesn't mean he's not emotional. In fact, that shows a kind of a big level of emotion, over the top growling.
Yeah,
but yeah.
So we get it. So he comes, he does his quips, he does
kills
his
the gang.
Yeah, catchphrase, and then he basically, yeah, he kills one batch. So there are two gangs that decide in different rooms that decide, I guess, to work together throughout it.
Yeah.
Heals one. The rookie is all excited because he wants to now take one, and he gets killed. And then Judge Dredd then, you know, kills all of them, and obviously he's dispensing the justice throughout it, saying the year, you know, that destruction of property, that'd be one year, and then something else, 5 years, and then killing an officer. And James Remar is saying, oh, well, let me guess, life. And as he's pulling the gun on Judge Dredd shoots him, saying death. And then,
yeah.
Yeah, that's me.
And again, yeah. And again, we get another hit from Bond Dredd.
Yeah. And surprisingly, it's not even that exciting, the whole shootout. Like, it goes by really quick, and it's like, oh, okay. That was it.
I guess that
just
happened.
Took down this game. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he's talking to Hershey, who is giving the whole showing emotion, and, you know, and that's, they're having this little back and forth where he's even kind of being flirty in a way that it almost, yeah, they're kind of playing this little flirty element that, again, is not really as much in the comic, which, but then the robot goes by, and, but the robot has a different sounding voice because it sounds like Fergie.
It has a strange Rob Schneider feel to it.
Yeah. And he knows the difference, Judge Dredd. So they finally find him, and he's trying in the robot. He was hacking it to kind of get away and he's trying to plead his case, saying that, you know, I was just trying to save myself, and they're shooting. And, you know, obviously Judge Dredd saying, well, you could have jumped out the window to avoid, you know, breaking a law. Well, it's 40 floors. I would have died. Well, you wouldn't have, at least that's not.
Yes, apparently suicide is legal in
yeah, Mega City One.
Also, yeah, like, I must say, the character of Fergie is so annoying in this film.
Yeah.
You know, if you were to do, I do not know, like, maybe we should, after this episode, like, do a poll, because, yeah. Like, I definitely think that in terms of, like, sci-fi action cinema, Fergie is in, like, my top three most irritating characters, alongside Jar Jar Binks and Chris Tucker's character in The Fifth Element.
Oh, I'd put him ahead of Chris Tucker, definitely. I know Chris Tucker is annoying in it, but I think because they play so much into it, there's, like, that part in me where I'm like, okay, I let it go a little bit more then. But, yeah, this one, it just, because it doesn't even fit.
Yeah, it feels, I guess, so, like, yeah. Out of place. Yeah, true.
Yeah, it just feels like they throw in all these components of, well, and that's what, because with who was supposed to originally be Fergie, why can't I think of his name now?
Joe Pesci.
Joe Pesci
was offered the role, or, like, Stallone wanted Joe Pesci to be the character.
Well, he said he didn't want to do sci-fi. And so, but they chose Rob Schneider just because he did comedy. So it's like, so Stallone went, oh, well, he might add a nice little, some quips to it or stuff like that. So it feels like they're just grabbing things and what we've kind of talked about of even imposing other sci-fi tropes in it or things like that of, well, this might work and this might work and this, and, you know, kind of throwing it all together.
Yeah, it does very much feel like that. And I don't know why, like, yeah, they're just like kind of throwing things into the mix, like left, right and center. And even the way they don't even like directly adapt like one story from the comic books, but they've just thrown together a whole bunch of different storylines and kind of mixed them in a blender of like, you know, the storyline to do with Rico, who we'll get to. And then there's a bit of the Judge Child in there. And then there's a bit of, you know, like it's all these kind of different kind of, you know, long running plot lines that are like thrown together in this kind of mad, not very cohesive at all mix.
Yeah. And that's what I always felt off about. And what I mean, the 2012 version I liked because it was, so it like introduced us to the character and it was so self-contained of like, here's just this normal crime that they're taking down a drug kingpin. Not to spoil it for anybody that hasn't watched it yet. You should, because it's great. But this one felt like even watching it now feels like a sequel or something, because it's like, it's so high stakes and there's so much to it, but they don't give us enough time to really introduce us to all of these elements.
Yeah, for like, sure.
Maybe if there was a one that introduced us that was like a normal, you know, more like the 2012 plot line, and then this is what we get later on when we know who Dredd is, when we know who Hershey or whoever, you know, these characters are.
Yeah, and kind of expand into the universe. Yeah, for sure, for sure. But we should maybe keep trucking with the plot, because we're like 40 minutes into the episode or something, and we're like 10 minutes into the film.
Yes. And we get all the nice kind of, because it kind of goes by in a blur or not, where he sentences Fergie, and that's where we don't see him again for a while. Yeah. And then we kind of just get little bits of him being, there's the news broadcast, but there's several things kind of quickly going through at once, where we're getting the news broadcast of the riots, where the, you know, the anchor is definitely very vocal about the issues he has. Yeah. And especially with Judge Dredd. And then we kind of get them in the changing room, and there's more back and forth, and also Judge Dredd has to kind of work with Balthazar Getty or all of these other kind of young kids to teach them that are cadets, but they start out as judges, start out as children.
Yeah, going which again, like, kind of feeds in a little bit to the satire of, like, you know, they're kind of done up kind of Nazi youth style, you know, kind of feeds in a little bit again, but again, it doesn't really do anything with it. Unlike RoboCop, which was, you know, interestingly heavily inspired by Judge Dredd itself, and meant that they didn't want to do Judge Dredd for years afterwards because they thought the properties would turn out looking too similar. You know, it really should have that kind of tone. And, like, it seems like at the time, like, just Hollywood was very bad at that tone outside of movies directed by Paul Verhoeven. Like, he was basically the director. He was your go-to director if you wanted a kind of action satire that, like, mixed these elements and got that tone correct. Because, otherwise, Hollywood always seemed to be like, no, it has to exist in this box. It's either the serious, violent, dark action sci-fi, or it's, you know, light comedic, you know, buddy cop, you know, whatever. It's either one thing or the other. It can't be this, like, mixture of, like, ultra-violent and but also, like funny. And it just, and again, it's just that thing of, like, the, you know, there's plenty of comedy in Judge Dredd's, the comics, but just not the comedy that this film wants to press on us.
Yeah. But, no, I, yeah. And that's kind of, I know, an issue we've talked about throughout the, about tone, throughout the whole, both seasons so far. But yeah, I know, so for it, it just, all of these scenes leading up until, and it feels like forever until we actually get moving along and get to Rico and to get everything.
Yeah, but it does, like, it does feel
like these little, yeah.
It does feel tiny, like a little while, you know, because yeah, everything feels very separate. So like yeah, there's these kind of things kind of setting up the plot of, like, you do, you have like a little scene of Judge Griffin, who's played by Jürgen Prochnow, kind of petitioning the council for like more executions and stuff like that, and you're kind of like, he might seem like a bad egg, yeah, you know, like he might be one of the villains of the movie, guess what, you know. And then yeah, and we get like the introduction of Rico. I do like, obviously one of the big controversial moments in the movie happens early on. I took a note of this because I wanted to know precisely when this happened. So like, Dredd takes his helmet off.
Yes.
And that's one of the big sticking points for like all Judge Dredd fans, that like Stallone spends most of the movie with the helmet off. And to be fair, I, you know, like Disney's paying him a lot of money, and you know, like, you know, obviously thought it's much more marketable to have his face on display. But it takes him, so Judge Dredd is introduced at the 8 minute mark, and I timed it, he takes his helmet off at 16 minutes and 30 seconds. So just over 8 minutes he has his helmet on before he takes it off.
And then he doesn't have it on again until at the very end, as he's driving away and the credits are rolling.
Dear. But yeah, but then anyway, we cut to the Aspen Penal Colony, where we are introduced to Rico, and suddenly we're watching Demolition Man.
Yeah, with Armand Asante, who either knows exactly the type of movie he's in, or is just, somebody's having fun with it, and it's
he is having a lot of fun with it.
Yeah. And I mean, it has some of those fun elements where the guy's bringing him the package from their mysterious benefactor. He says, "Oh, what is it?" He goes, "The meaning of life." Oh, yeah, whatever. What is the meaning of life? It ends. It turns into a gun, and he shoots him. And it's like,
and he very specifically shoots him through the throat because
yeah,
there's these guns pointed at him, like these machine gun turrets kind of pointed at him, but they're like voice controlled, so he shoots them through the throat so the warden can't do the kind of voice control, and then the warden gets all shot up by the,
basically like in RoboCop where the guy gets all shot up by
yeah. It's like lifting a lot of things, like we should have mentioned as well, like when we get the first shot of Mega City 1, it's like it's lifting heavily from Blade Runner, so we're getting some heavy lifts from Blade Runner, we're getting some heavy lifts from RoboCop, and we're definitely getting, we will talk more about all the lifts from Demolition Man as well, because like the plot is weirdly similar in a lot of different ways.
Yeah. And so, yeah, that's another thing where we get Rico, that happens, and then he just kind of, or then, you know, two guards come in and he's able to defeat them, kill them, and then like he disappears for a bit. And then we get more kind of random scenes where we're seeing, I think this is where
training the kids and stuff like that.
And he's even making jokes, and he's like, he's very kind of nice teachery to these kids. Again, that goes against not only the source material character, which again, whatever, but also the character that in the dialogue we are made to believe he's supposed to be.
Yeah, because like he is quite friendly with the kids and stuff like that, but then like the way Hershey reacts to his little speech, his little kind of motivational speech or whatever, that goes into a bit dark territory. You know, she's like kind of mortified as if he's just been like scolding these kids and like, you know, like really pushing them beyond their limits or like, you know, like, yeah, it's just, yeah, the characters react to Dredd as if he's like this, emotionless boy, and he's just nothing penetrates or whatever, and he treats everybody kind of offhandedly or whatever, but like he doesn't really, he just you know, like he's a bit surly but like essentially quite friendly.
He's basically the same character as he was in Demolition Man.
Yeah. He's just as quippy as John Spartan. He has he is essentially the same character as he is in Demolition Man.
Yeah,
which is kind of like angry tough cop, but you know, with a heart, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
And so through all these random scenes, we get Rico finds himself back into the city, and he goes to pick up a case that's been left for him at this pawn shop. And he finds, and not only does he get the case, but he also has there's this giant antique robot that was from the wars, that apparently you can have the robot as a collector. But it has to be not usable, despite the fact that it can be reprogrammed literally by just plugging in a wire. So whoever did that didn't plan that out well of kind of deactivating this, war machine.
Yeah, that is true. And I do want to mention for British listeners, because I think it's worth mentioning, because I think it's quite fun. The shop, the kind of pawn shop that he goes into, the owner of that shop, the character of Geiger, is played by Ian Dury. And Ian Dury, as British listeners may know, was the lead singer of a British post-punk band called Ian Dury and the Blockheads. Who had hits with things like Hit Me With Your Rhythm Stick, Reason to Be Cheerful Part 3, and Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll, all of which are quality singles. And he made some damn fine music.
And the scene, I like the scene a little bit, and he's even giving little jokes. And again, you just get another kind of where Rico quickly says something and then shoots him, where he says you shouldn't grab that gun, they'll take your arm off. And so he grabs the gun and goes, oh well, I guess I must be a cop, or I must be a judge. And then that's it. Like, that's kind of how his shtick for a lot of it is. Like, he says something that's like the says his own little lines to kill people, but does it opposite of Judge Dredd, where Judge's Dredd is law related, he's just sinister related. They give us many reasons to know that Rico is a bad guy.
That is true. And the film's very, very deliberately doing that, kind of like, there is like mirror images of each other, which might come into the plot later.
We're going to keep showing their very bright blue eyes. There's many shots of that.
Indeed.
Have very bright blue eyes.
Could there be a connection there? So he like reactivates the ABC Warrior, which is which is a character in the comics, ABC Warrior, the characters in the comics Hammerstein.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when he has this is basically when the satire of the movie kind of ends.
Yeah.
Of like, we've had like these little bits of satire, and there's this whole kind of subplot of this reporter, Vartis Hammond, who is this investigative reporter, very down on the whole judge system, kind of wants to take the system down, it seems. And it seems like he's maybe going to be an important character, a la Edgar Friendly in Demolition Man. However, no, that does not happen. He is immediately assassinated.
And by somebody dressed in Dredd's gear. And the person busts in, shoots it up, and a camera catches it all. And and then Judge Dredd is going on Hershey is handling just a traffic violation, which Dredd helps out about, where this kind of jerk guy is wanting to deal with, or he's driving his fancy car and he's bumping all these other cars, And so he's being rude to Hershey. And but then when he sees Dredd, which it doesn't make sense fully, because there's parts where it's like everybody in the city knows Dredd specifically, but then there's parts where it seems like they don't. I don't know. Or it's just because of the name Dredd itself sounds terrifying. But
yeah. Yeah, I think so. And like, yeah, I mean, this scene kind of doesn't make sense as well, because like, in, you know, even ignoring the comics, right?
Yeah.
You've kind of set up this world where, you know, it is this kind of fascistic regime. So everybody's under this kind of boot of oppression of the judge system.
Yeah.
Then everybody knows that it is this kind of super severe law and order system. So it kind of doesn't make sense that this asshole yuppie guy, who, apart from being an asshole yuppie guy, apparently does have quite good taste in music, because they, with his companion in the car, they're listening to Supercharger Heaven by White Zombie. So
yeah.
Fair play to him on that regard. But anyway, he tries to bribe Hershey, which it doesn't feel like it makes sense within the universe that's been set up, of just being like, oh, it's this harsh disciplinarian society. So, but like, why would he think he would get away with that?
Yeah, no, I agree, because it just doesn't, it just feels like they added it in for a point, for like, to either show more connection between Hershey and Dredd. Like, that's the only purpose of it, and to show how Dredd is coming in and kind of helping her and saving the day when, I mean, she doesn't even really necessarily need his help at all. She was handling the situation, yeah. All he did was almost make things
worse. He just escalated
by blowing up the car.
And then we get like another one-liner. I can't remember specifically what he says now, actually. We get another one-liner about enjoy driving or something.
But it's there so that the other police that aren't judges, that either are or something, they're dressed up differently. They're not street judges, I guess.
They're a different type of, like, the stormtroopers, as we'll call them.
So they can come up and say that Judge Dredd is under arrest. And he's pretty kind of calm about it. And and then we go into, we don't go right into the trial, because isn't that where we get Rico meeting Griffin? Or did that happen?
No, Rico hasn't met Griffin. No,
okay.
Like, we've not made that connection yet. No.
Okay.
Like, that doesn't happen for a little, like, I don't think Rico and Griffin, like, meet up at this point. Like, we get, like, a little scene where Chief Fargo, played by Max von Sydow, he has, like, a little man-to-man with Dredd when he's in the holding cell before we then go into the trial.
Yeah, and he's saying, I just wanted to look into your eyes to see if you're telling the truth. And obviously Judge Dredd would never break the law, so he knows he's not lying to him. Or at least he thinks he isn't.
Yeah, although he then, I suppose there is DNA evidence, so like he believes it. We get this trial. Initially, there's a video showing Dredd doing it, but then that is seen as inadmissible because one of the younger students with his techie knowledge is like, oh, well, it could be faked. You know, the uniform could be faked, badges can be faked, and we can't get a clear look at his face. It's too low res. So that's thrown out. But then we get this DNA evidence that shows that only the judge who has the gun can that basically there is DNA on each bullet of the gun called the Lawgiver, the Lawgiver 2. And that proves indisputably that Dredd killed the reporter Vardis Hammond and his wife, Mrs. Hammond.
And Dredd, who is supposed to have no emotion, then has his whole yell of that, his lies. I didn't break the law. I am the law. Because, you know, the guy that shows no emotion, he has a whole upset in court. But yeah.
And this is also kind of when we get the first talk of the Genius Project. And we don't, at this point, we're like, oh, well, that's going to come up in the plot later, but, like, what's the Genius Project? We basically, yes, at this point, it's not fully been revealed that Griffin, Jürgen Prochnow's character, is one of the villains of the movie, but it's been kind of like, yeah, he's definitely one of the villains of the movie. He's introduced as like, we should definitely execute more people, and then he's like, oh, Judge Fargo, like, maybe, you know, like, giving him kind of dodgy advice. So, like, we're like, ah, yes, okay, definitely villain.
They do not pepper it or anything.
They make it very clear. It's not like a grand reveal or anything of like, oh, that guy? Fucking hell. I didn't see that coming.
And so he is also convincing the chief judge to say, well, what you could do is you take the long walk. And by doing that, you would almost save Dredd from execution, because you think of Dredd like a son. All that. And the long walk is, you know, judges that reach a certain age, or once you reach a certain age as a judge and you're retiring, you get basically cast out into the scorched earth, or
the cursed earth.
Yeah, cursed earth.
Yeah. So it's because Dredd mentioned this earlier on in the movie that's how judges retire. That, like, if you get old, if you're not killed on duty, then you retire by wandering out into the cursed earth, which is just like the rest of the kind of earth outside the mega cities are just kind of like these, just desert wastelands, basically.
Yeah. And it's basically like a Mad Max thing for anybody that.
Yeah. It is basically like a Mad Max. This movie is ripping off all sorts of things. Yeah.
And, their whole goal is, well, what they're told is to go bring law to the lawless lands and stuff like that. Yeah. And so he retires and basically sacrifices himself in a way to at least save Dredd, which gives Dredd a lifelong sentence in the Aspen prison. And then, so it does this back and forth while we're seeing Dredd get stripped and get, you know, his muscles showing and all of that. And then the Chief Justice being honored. So one's being losing everything, one's kind of having this honorable exit, and the
that's true. I suppose we should mention that in this movie, unlike a lot of the movies we covered, we do not get any naked butt shots we've got in several of the previous movies. But we do get a couple of times where Stallone is in a very tight leotard. So,
we do, yes. And they make this one makes sure to show the shoulders a lot, because he's wearing the tank top the whole time, and it's one where it's like it only has the small strip up the back or whatever.
That's true.
His muscles.
That's true. And it's kind of big, like when he is in his full uniform, like the big over the top kind of gold shoulder pads, and the way it's is designed, apparently designed by Yanni Versace.
Yeah.
there you go. But then this is when we get the big reveal that, oh my God, Griffin's the bad guy. After like sent out in the long walk, Dredd's been sent out of jail. Griffin is now Chief Justice. Although in the comics they're just called Chief Judge. Like I don't know why they both changed that. It seems like the weirdest thing. But anyway, he becomes Chief Justice, and then it is revealed that like he is the guy who's been orchestrating things all along. He's the one who got Rico out of jail, and we get a very, and basically he kind of feels gutted. He's like, maybe we should have got Dredd on board, you know, and
he would have been, he's like our best cop.
So. Yeah, but like as in a lot of scenes, Armand Asante is just very entertaining. Like he's just. he's not chewing the scenery. He's got the knife and fork out, and he is just devouring the scenery. Like, there's some great lines in this one, you know, this one particular scene. So at one point he says, "Forget Dredd, he only worships Allah." And then Judge Griffin is talking about, like, wanting to create fear and chaos within, as much fear and chaos within Mega City as possible, to kind of enact his plan, which we'll go into greater detail as the plot reveals it. And then Armin Desante says, "You want fear? I am fear. You want chaos? I am chaos. You want a new beginning? I am the new beginning." I don't know what that even means.
Yeah.
Like, that last one's just like, what do you mean you're the new beginning?
Yeah.
What? I mean, it sounds entertaining when you say it, but, like, doesn't seem to have a lot of logic to it.
Yeah. Well, this one, more than we've talked about with so many of these Dredd, or not Dredd, so many of these Stallone villains, it's like there's always that one, even that are cranked up to like 11. He is like cranked up to 25, you know.
I mean, like, you can see like the veins like popping at the side of his head and all that. It's kind of, it's like, I mean, he is acting his absolute goddamn socks off.
Yeah. He earned that paycheck.
I don't know. I mean, like, I'm not going to make any aspersions on the man. I'm going to assume that the performance was done sober. But, like, if any performance looks cocaine-fueled, that is...
Yes.
And if that is Armin Desante without cocaine, well... Don't never give Armin the Sanjik.
Yeah.
But
the movie is better for it, at least.
Because he is one of the most entertaining, like, elements of the movie, for sure.
Yeah. And so next up we have, we see Dredd, and he's basically walking up to the shuttle that it will take him to prison, and he ends up being right next to...
everybody's favorite character.
Fergie, a.k.a. Rob Schneider. And they're sitting next to each other because, obviously, the script wants that to happen. And Rob Schneider, you know, makes a comment about it and knowing who he is. And then another prisoner right behind them gets wind. And that prisoner isn't too happy because Dredd must have locked him up, too.
Yeah. And then that causes great mayhem. Although... Yep. Then we are introduced to the Angel Gang, who plan to shoot down the prison transport shuttle.
Yes, and, you know, they're just your standard wasteland gang, where it's clear that they're hillbillies, and they have all of the tropes that come with any sort of wasteland gang in any kind of Mad Max-y, like, movie. They're deformed and stuff like that.
I mean, there's definitely, in this section, there's definitely a kind of heavy Hills of Eyes as well.
Yes. And they, while they're watching this and they're very religious too, they found their version of God out there in the wasteland. And there's the prisoner who's able to kind of break free of his shackles. And he's trying to stab Dredd in the throat, saying, "Payback time, Dredd," and he's holding it to him. And so that's going on as there's basically a rocket being fired at the ship to bring it down.
And the rocket is fired by Junior Angel, who is I am recording this from Edinburgh, so I'm legally obligated by the Scottish government to mention any Scottish actor in any podcast.
Spud from, yeah.
So it is played by Ewan Bremner, who would the very next year have his big breakout role as Spud in Trainspotting. Just thought I'd throw that in, that's the law in Scotland. Nah, it's not right. Just kidding.
Obviously, you know, Trainspotting is significantly better than this movie, but yeah.
Yeah. But Anyway, I just thought it through that. It's interesting as well because the Angel Gang is played mainly by British actors, like Christopher Adamson, who's played various deformed villains in various blockbusters, and also a movie we talked about in the Guilty Pleasure series of my podcast, New Horror Express, Evil Aliens.
I was on that one.
Yes, I know. That's yep. Why I brought it up. But Pie Angel is not played by a British actor. The rest of them are. He's played by Scott Wilson, who would go on to be most famous for playing Herschel in The Walking Dead, I would say.
Yeah. And he's been in, I was trying to, because I remembered him from that, but he's one of those faces that has kind of, he's been around for years.
Yeah.
And so they're brought down, and then we basically are jumping into, one, Hershey is kind of continuing on her investigation, and looking at the locker, and she finds a picture of Dredd as a baby and his parents potentially, and then there's also another picture of him shaking hands and being buddy buddy with a person who she can only assume is his only friend, because before he suggested he only has had one friend, but he had to judge him. So maybe that was foreshadowing for this. And then throughout that, then we also get Griffin is told, or it's communicated, that the ship was brought down and that they're scoping it out, and that Dredd is no longer, wasn't on board. And Griffin keeps saying that there were no survivors. And, you know, a soldier's like, we found the pilot. He's alive. There were no survivors.
And they get that message, and the pilot's like, what the fuck? I thought I was going to get saved.
Yeah. And. Yeah, then we get to meet the Angel Gang a little bit closer up as Rob Schneider, Fergie, and Judge Dredd are basically hanging from ropes in this, you know, barn-looking thing. Even though it's not even a barn, it's an abandoned building, but
yeah,
it's kind of half underground and everything that comes with, you know, nuclear fallout, I assume, if we were in one.
Yeah,
that's when we meet them. They're talking about Lord, and then you're really introduced, but more so that Dredd already knew about all of them. He's heard about the Angel Gang, so he introduces or gives us the MO on all of them. And
crimes. Like, yeah. Pie Angel gives us like fun introductions of like, and this is my youngest, and this is my, you know, like, and here's Mean Machine. We call this one Mean Machine. He had some, you know, things, you know, it's very tough out here in the cursed earth. And
yeah. And he cranks up his, like, head knob thing. I guess that makes
sense. Yeah, he's got like a kind of dial in the middle of his forehead that kind of turns up his aggressiveness somehow.
Yeah. And, so it ends up they do that, but Dredd, it feels like he kind of stops because maybe he left out one of their crimes, but I don't know. We might see. But obviously Fergie starts, you know, praising the Lord and, you know, saying, and they're like, oh, we got ourselves another believer, you know, and, you know, in their kind of really bad Southern accents. The stereotype. And so they take off Fergie, and Dredd keeps saying,
oh, I think like Scott Wilson's actually from like Georgia or something.
Yeah.
I think, but I mean, the rest of them are British actors, but like, at least, you know, like, I don't know. Yeah. Apparently he was born in Thomasville, Georgia.
There
so
we go.
At least there is one actor of the gang who is actually from the South.
Yeah. And his work. But I mean, we get some of those very iconic Southern accents. They're like, "Hey, Paul," you know.
Well, you got like a Scotsman and two Englishmen doing it. You know? So it's essentially just like me being like,
Dredd keeps warning Fergie, saying, you know, you're making a big mistake. And, you know, obviously Fergie's cocky of, no, Dredd, I'm not making a mistake. The only one is, you're still up there and I'm right here. And that's when Dredd remembers there was another crime that they commit, cannibalism.
I mean, I think he always remembered. I think he was just being a dick.
Yeah. I mean, that is kind of, why would you wait until the guy is off the rope and all of that to say it?
Like, I know, it's just, like, I want to see him really sweat when I make this reveal that he is about to be eaten.
Yeah.
And then kind of like, obviously, you know, we discussed that this film was submitted a bunch of times to the MPAA. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of like the grisliest moment of the movies, because we do see a guy who's like on a spit roast, who's obviously already been cooked.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what's interesting, hearing that kind of information from you about that, because thinking about the movie now, and even when I was watching it, it's like, there isn't that much. I mean, there's some, a little bit of blood here and there, but it's not really that. The violence isn't extreme enough to, for me to think it would get a, like an NC-17 rating for four times. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I presume the opening scene's bloodier. I presume the death of the warden's bloodier. Yeah. There's scenes later on in the movie that there's like weird edits on that we'll talk about when they come up, like where I assume it was nastier, but it's kind of cut.
Yeah, but so then he is able to get, Dredd is able to get off of his hook. Or whatever, and he kind of beats up the guys and he kills them all and he turns down the dial on the one, and you think, okay, well, they're practically all done, but no, then the other judges.
The other judges, whatever they're called.
that definitely aren't stormtroopers. They come in because they have to end Dredd, and so it like goes from a fight with that family right into a fight with them. But Dredd is saved by the last one, by a certain justice, also, or a chief judge, who may have already been wandering the wasteland.
Dun, dun, dun. It's the return of former Chief Justice Fargo, played by Max von Sydow.
Yeah. But not long, even though they're happy to see each other. He instantly gets impaled by the one with the
Mean Machine.
Mean Machine, there we go. Yeah, Mean Machine, who then, and this is another thing that's popped up several times in Stallone's movies, and I realized this, you know, maybe because we've been watching them so close together, where he does the three strike thing, and there seems to be a fight that Stallone has in all of these movies where the guy is almost egging him on. You know, you have the wrong answer section and cliffhanger. There's one in Demolition Man. So this one is the, you get three strikes, and so strike one, strike two, and then he hits him in the head with this metal bar and it doesn't do anything. He says strike three. But that seems to be a common thing.
Yeah.
In these Stallone movies.
Yeah. It seems to be a definite thread where it's like, we get like one character who seems like semi-invincible that goads Stallone, and then Stallone beats him at the last second kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And this, you know, obviously we get more, that he slams his hand, or he shoves his hand into a wall and it gets stuck because of the like spikes and everything.
He basically has he has this like metal arm, and it's at the end of the arm, he's got kind of Swiss Army knife kind of with various sharp pointy things.
And Dredd does the whole, he's giving a charge of using illegal electricity. How do you plead? And the guy kind of yells. He says, I knew you'd say that. And he electrocutes him. And you know, because we need more of the "I knew you'd say that."
Yeah, I knew you'd say that. They're like that. Is that that classic Judge Dredd catchphrase?
Yeah.
But then basically everybody kind of finds out Dredd's origins, or kind of
at the same time.
Hershey's investigation kind of shows that the picture with the parents is a fake, and like he's actually, when you take the parents out of the image, like the image, the only true parts of the image are the baby in the image, and then it's just like this laboratory, and then we get this kind of big exposition dump from former Chief Justice Fargo as he's dying. He takes a while to die. Like, he looks like when he's impaled initially that he is dead, that he has been killed by that, but actually he's not been killed. He has enough time to give like a kind of 10-minute monologue of being like, here are your origins, and like, you were born in the lab, and Rico is your brother because he is made from the same DNA, which is actually my DNA. So I am technically your father. We're having a Star Wars moment.
I mean, they had enough time to like make a fire. They put a blanket over him. So this wasn't like, he's been dying for some time now.
Yeah, he's been dying for hours.
Yeah.
And then, but again, you know, like Dredd's, no emotion Dredd, you know, like when he dies, he's all like, no. And then, you know, like, and then we get him kind of like staring broodily at this Lady Law statue, you know, and it, again, just feels full of him, brimming with emotion.
Yeah. Yeah. And they talk about Law in such a way that they're kind of, again, it's the opposite, I guess, of how the law works in the comic itself, where in this one they're talking about how the law is so just, and basically, I don't know, they talk about it with more like
sentiment. It's very sentimental kind of wafty talk of the law, and you know, how generally good it is, but apart from when it kind of, we've all overextended ourselves a bit sometimes, but essentially it's, you know, at its heart, it's real decent.
Yeah. And so, and this is where the attack on the judges start beginning.
Yes. And we also get the introduction of Joan Chen's character, Ilsa, or Dr. Hayden, which I don't know. Like, it seems weird to introduce a character hour into the film. It feels like she should have been introduced maybe earlier. But it's like, oh, like, we've got this female Dr. Frankenstein character. Sure. Okay.
Yeah. She doesn't like Rico. They kind of have back and forth, but yeah, that's what
he calls him, a petulant child.
Yeah, but yet there's some sexual tension. They make it clear, but no, I'd agree completely. Watching it, it's like, this is somebody that it seems like they would have even brought her on when we first meet Rico. Like, she's the one that was collecting or something. It feels like she was just thrown in last minute, and then they kind of have this connection with each other that, you know, then goes rapid speed, because they really only have two scenes together before it's like, oh, so now they're like,
oh, now they're like a couple. Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. It's just kind of weird. It's kind of weird. But then, we basically get like a montage of like all the judges being attacked. We get a big explosion at a bank. We get the changing room, the precinct exploding. Then we get the ABC warrior killing a bunch of folk. Hershey's bike blows up. And there's all these attacks on the judges, and then this is when Griffin makes his big move to have the to have the Janus Project for, you know, which has been making clones, made the clones, it made Judge Dredd and Rico, as we discovered, to have that reinstated.
But those other judges still don't want it, and it doesn't work for them, so they get offed.
Yeah, right. Like,
those are chief judges, I guess.
Yeah, the other members of the council, who are like, it's played weird in the movie. Of it's like Judge Griffin's like, oh, we should definitely unlock the files on the Janus Project, and they're like, yeah, sure, maybe we should do that. And then immediately, 2 seconds after, they're like, no, we definitely shouldn't do that. We immediately regret our decision. It's like, yeah, this feels kind of okay.
It feels like it's just added lines almost. I don't know. Or maybe there was supposed to be a longer scene in between and they just forgot to cut out some of it.
Yeah, but anyway, we'll leave it be. There's more logic defying stuff coming up, so yeah. We'll continue on.
So Dredd and Fergie find out that Dredd knows that there's a way back into Mega City if they are to run through this tunnel that shoots out fire every 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously this is where Fergie is supposed to, it becomes kind of a buddy movie, I guess.
Yeah, okay, kind of.
Because he, he obviously doesn't want to go. And they have some little back and forth, but finally they start running through and they're able to get, and Dredd even saves them, and they're able to get back into Mega City.
Fun story about this. Apparently, according to Rob Schneider in an interview, Stallone was given lots of kind of flame retardant clothing, and Schneider was given nothing.
Really?
Yeah, apparently so. Well, according to him, in an interview, that's what he said.
And Schneider's the one that ends up being—he's supposed to be closer to the fire too. In the fight,
yep.
He's the one in more danger.
So to be fair, as much as I hate this character in this movie, I feel sorry for him in that regard.
Yeah.
There is a later scene as well, you know, like the scene later where he's like running downstairs.
Yeah.
He you see it in the making of. The little making of video, the documentary that you can see on YouTube, that was made at the time. He falls and like face plants, and like really quite badly injures his ankle, running down those stairs. Like the first time, first take they did it, he like just tripped and like it. It's you should watch it. It's quite a nasty landing, and it was like, oh man, Rob Schneider didn't have the greatest of times in terms of in terms of hurting himself in this movie.
And in his mind, it's probably like, I'm just coming up, I'm almost off of SNL, or just came off of SNL, like this is gonna be it for me. It's really gonna change everything around.
Yeah. This big budget project, what could go wrong, man? It's going to be a massive blockbuster. It's going to make me. but they do manage to get into the city. They manage to avoid that fireball. And thankfully, we can say that they managed to avoid the fireball in real life. Rob Schneider has stayed intact to this day.
Yeah. And so they go to Hershey where they kind of get more exposition of what we've already seen.
Yeah.
And Hershey is at first she's kind of not sure about Judge Dredd, but obviously that changes within a couple of seconds because, you know, the script says so. And then, they talk about kind of what is the plan is going to be to break in and kind of bring justice to these wrongdoers. And then during that time, Rob Schneider or Fergie is also he's working on some device because he's a hacker and he's trying to
reroute. So, like, before we get to like Hershey's apartment, like that is where we get like the. Because they first go into the halls of justice and stuff.
Oh, yep.
And
yep.
They're like, and then he like nicks a uniform from a guy. And then there's like this kind of weird homophobic moment where it's kind of, it's made to look like Stallone's going to basically rape the guy. And like, this is, and Fergie's like, oh, there's no time for this. And it's like, he just looks at him as if being like, were you mental? I'm obviously not going to rape this guy. Yeah. And it's just a really weird, off moment. But then we kind of get like a chase scene and they're like running through the halls. And I think that's where he like falls over. And, then we get like this whole kind of, chase on the Lawmaster bikes. We get this, which is a good action set piece. We should probably mention it just because of that. Of like, it's really good action set piece of like the Lawmaster bike chase. Before we land at Hershey's apartment.
No, that one, it works really well. And yeah, and there's kind of you get this Lawmaster that has been malfunctioning. It's seen malfunctioning early on. It's like a test one for the cadets, and then. So it'll keep going off and on while they're doing this through these high speed chase through the city. And yeah, it's fun. The thing that gets you is you kind of hear Fergie screaming the whole time.
Yeah. That's like, kind of annoying.
Yeah. But, you know, and then there's like Dredd jumping onto the other one to fight one of the guys. And they're, you know, they're flying over people, and yeah, it works really well. And I think, again, even for the year it came out, I think it still looks pretty decent.
Yeah, I think so. Like special effects. I mean, like the film is now coming up for 26 years old, and I think it looks pretty solid, pretty decent. Yeah, for sure. And yeah, like. Again, I think kind of intercutting with this is like we get a bit more of Rico, and so the doctor character, Joan Chen's character, who I do feel sorry for, like we've covered two movies that have featured Joan Chen, and in both she has been entirely wasted and given no material to work with, so she's really facing an uphill struggle. In case listeners don't remember, the other movie that featuring Joan Chen was of course the Steven Seagal film On Deadly Ground. Poor Joan Chen. On Deadly Ground came out in 1994. This came out in 1995. That's just, she deserved better.
Yeah. And she's good too. It's just, yeah, I agree completely that.
She's just got nothing to work with.
Yeah. Like they bring her in at the last bit and say, okay, kind of be a rude doctor. But now you're not being a rude doctor. Now you're like his love interest.
Because like,
woman or something, I don't know.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, like they're like a partnership now. It's like, oh, we get one scene where she's calling him a petulant child, and then we get a scene of like he switches what the DNA sample for the clones are going to be, and then suddenly it's like, oh, they're like a couple. Cool.
Yeah. Because he just says, you know, I had to work for Griffin because I was. He got me when I was in prison, so I didn't have a choice. But what's your excuse? And that's what changes her instantly, I guess.
For sure. That's just like, oh, that argument is entirely sound. I am now by your side. I also love, like, when we cut back to Hershey's, like, apartment, like, we get a scene where, again, we're talking about Dredd's lack of emotion. He's like talking about no feelings, no emotion. And yet he's on the bed and he's practically crying. He's like, and I don't mind vulnerability in my heroes, but you know, it's just like, it's not the character. Like, you know, stop telling us he has no feelings and no emotions when that is not what is on screen.
Yeah. Well, and even for the sake of Fergie, he's one of those characters where, you know, normally in these buddy movies, they're stuck together for some reason. That's why they can't separate, or there's something driving them both to go that certain way, whatever it may be. This one, it doesn't feel like, you're kind of wondering, well, why are you still with Dredd? I mean, it doesn't feel like there's any reason for them to be together besides the plot told them, you know, because the script told them to.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, Fergie's kind of like, I mean, I suppose he's kind of sticking by Dredd because
he saved him.
Because
from the
he saved him, and because maybe he thinks that Dredd can, like, if he helps him, then Dredd will officially clear his name. Because maybe he's worried about still being a fugitive.
I guess.
That's the best logic I can give you, Craig. You know, like, what do you want?
Yeah, I guess that's it. But we put more thought into it than obviously the script.
I tried my best, Craig. Yeah. I wanted to give you some logic, you know, like something you can hold on to. But that's all I got.
But when they're in there, they kind of realize that there was a major power surge, and so they're kind of pinpointing where this project, and so that's where they must be, Griffin and Rico and all.
But just like in Demolition Man, Rico turns on Griffin.
Yep, and because Griffin is upset that Rico put in his own blood. Rico is saying, "Well, I don't want any mindless drones falling around. I want them to be free thinkers and that." And then the ABC robot, it grabs Griffin, and even though we don't see it, we are told that it's going to rip his arms off, his legs off, and save his head for last.
Yeah. So I name, when he does rip his arms off, the camera, pans down, and we just see a little bit of a kind of pool of blood on the floor. This does definitely feel like one of those moments that has been edited. I presume in the original canon cut, # release the canon cut, we get to see him rip his arms off. And there's a few other moments kind of in the scene. Like, I do know that this kind of finale was kind of edited down quite heavily.
Yeah.
Because there was apparently sequences where you just see Dredd shooting up the clones and all that kind of stuff. So it does seem like there, and when you watch it, it does feel quite jumpy. It just kind of, it feels oddly edited. It feels kind of like there is stuff missing. You know, like, what's...
Yeah, because there's a whole section where Rico tells the computer he wants the clones to be hatched now. It says, they're only at 60%. It says, I need backup, hatch them now, basically overriding it. But then they don't even really... You'd see maybe an arm pop up from one of them or one of them lift up, but that's it. It's not like they officially hatched to really provide backup assistant. So it just seemed, I don't know. And it ends up being pointless, basically.
It does end up being pointless, but apparently the Dredd did have a kind of battle with them, you know, when in the original cut. There is more of an interaction there. And it's kind of not explained, I suppose we should mention Fergie gets shot by the ABC warrior, and then she is briefly kind of captured by it, but then Fergie manages to hack the ABC warrior, and then there's this kind of big fight between Rico and Dredd, and then there's this big fight between Hershey and Ilsa.
Hershey is a a highly trained cop, or judge, and Ilsa
apparently just a scientist, just the kind of wacky Dr. Frankenstein style scientist.
Who can hold up her own.
But yeah, but apparently he's also got some martial arts skills. Which kind of just feels like Hollywood racism. Well, this Asian woman, I'm sure she knows martial arts.
That's not the... It's not the first time that it's popped up on this podcast so far. Oh, we have an Asian character, so.
Oh, gosh. I know.
You have to have martial arts.
Yeah, that is a problem of running a 90s action podcast. You know, it's like we shall encounter more Hollywood racism as going forward. I am sure we've already encountered some. It's just something we have to recognize and deal with it. You know, as much as we love a lot of these movies, so they have some problematic elements, a bunch of them.
Very much.
But I mean, like, this aren't like a kind of alright fight. The fight between her and Hersey is almost better than the fight between Rico and Dredd, I think. It feels quite impactful. Particularly when, like, Diane Lane just headbutts her.
Yeah, and then because she calls her bitch, and she's like, that's Judge Bitch.
Just headbutts her. It's amazing. Yeah. And so apparently, again, in the kind of making of video, that was a stunt double for Joan Chen, but that was actual Diane Lane. Diane Lane wanted to do her own stunts. So that's actual Diane Lane delivering that headbutt. So good on her.
Yeah. No, and it does work. That's what, I don't know, the fact that you're talking more and more about how much was cut from it, it just, especially watching it now after all these years, it is very underwhelmed, just in general. The whole thing, the whole fight just kind of feels like it goes by in a blur.
It's true.
Yeah.
And like, it just... Like, from a kind of watching point of view, it kind of doesn't feel like it makes sense either.
Yeah.
When the lab suddenly starts exploding, you're not quite sure how that happened. There wasn't like a bomb that went off necessarily. It just seems to start falling apart of its own accord. And you're like, I suppose there was some shooting and stuff. Like, I feel like there's stuff missing, which there actually is.
Yeah. No, that makes more sense. And yeah, the fight and the whole setup, this is where the Demolition Man section, I mean, it's basically ripped right from the final fight of Demolition Man, minus, you know, the freezing liquid.
Yeah, but we do get this final fight inside the head of the Statue of Liberty, which is it's a fun image, you know.
Yeah,
this is pretty cool. As we've mentioned, like, there is all these kind of different moments that are just kind of ripped from like Demolition Man in terms of like Judge Griffin's motivation is very similar to Nigel Hawthorne's character and Demolition Man in terms of like rebuilding society in his own image, the betrayal of the villain by the other villain, the other psychopath that he set free, the way he's kind of set free in this and having this kind of tense conversation with the warden character that feels very similar. The end feels very similar. There's all sorts of kind of parallels to Demolition Man. Even down to like one of the weirdest parallels is the voice of the computer in Demolition Man, of like kind of the central computer in Demolition Man, and the voice of the Hall of Justice central computer in this movie. In both cases, the voice is Adrian Barbeau, which is just like a kind of weird random connection, but like, yeah, it's, there's a lot of Demolition Man DNA in this movie.
Yeah. But we did forget right before the fight. So Rico is trying to convince Dredd, you know, let's create a new world. And
oh, yes, that is true. We cannot have this podcast and not talk about the greatest exchange of dialogue in the movie. That is a fair point, Craig.
Yeah. Where, you know, Dredd obviously mentions it being against the law, and, you know, they don't follow the law, and Rico's upset because, you know, Dredd's been following this and it's just a puppet. So he does, and it's, you know, the biggest part of the whole movie where he goes, law! And then he's, you know, he's making fun of, or, you know, criticizing Dredd for his blind faith in the law.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
No matter how much energy I could put in me making fun of it, it'll still never, ever reach the level of theatrics that Armand Asante puts into it.
Oh, dear. I need to read out the exchange because it's just so fun. Like, yeah. So Rico says, "Why did you judge me? Why did you judge me?" Judge Dredd says, "You killed innocent people. A means to an end," Rico says. Judge Dredd, "You started a massacre. I caused a revolution. You betrayed the law." It's amazing. It makes the whole movie totally worth it.
Yeah, he discusses how their family. I'm your friend. I was your blood. We're family. We're the only, you know, family that we have. Or
yeah,
but they're so kind of jumping around. Their fight seemed weird because it shows Stallone. I know this happens a lot in action movies where you have like the hero who's really ripped. And then he's fighting the final guy, and it's just kind of, you're like, wait, well, they're not evenly matched. But that's one where you can definitely see it, where, you know, it shows Stallone in his tank top and all of his muscle. And then Rico Asante is like, man, he's a kind of much smaller guy than Stallone. Like, looking at them, like.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And he's just holding his own against them.
Yeah.
And kind of winning the fight for a good portion of it.
Yeah. Until he's not, and we get another one of Judge Dredd's famous catchphrases, yes. Courts adjourned, and he is thrown off the Statue of Liberty and has a very Alan Rickman in Die Hard style death.
Yeah.
Whereas that's kind of, which were very, very popular in the 90s, of people falling off things in slow motion.
And then Hershey saves Dredd for, was it the third?
The third time. That's the third time.
An ongoing joke, I guess, she has with him about all the time she's helped him out and saved him.
After being headbutted, Ilsa comes back and tries to shoot Dredd, but is shot through the back by Hershey, and that is the third time that she has helped Dredd out, so owing her favors. And I mean, that pretty much wraps it up. It feels very abruptly that we get a little exposition dump of kind of like, oh yeah, everything was broadcast, so everybody knows you're innocent. It's all good now. The end.
Yeah. They say, do you want to be the new chief judge or justice? And he goes, no, I'm a street judge. And he just puts on his uniform to go out. But then, you know, Hershey kisses him because...
Because they've been love interests the whole time, because that's been super well built up.
And Fergie gives commentary the whole time while he's on a stretcher of like, oh, I taught him everything he knows. Oh, I'm a better kisser than that, you know. It's dumb, but yeah.
Which, I mean, you could say that about the whole performance and that whole character, and it's terrible inclusion in this film, that's pretty much it. But like, oh, we do get like that one last time where he says, oh, I knew you'd say that, you know, his other big catchphrase that we've been really selling in the movie.
Yeah. And then he drives off, and you know, the crowd of people are all cheering, and
punching the air and you know,
yeah. Like, and then he looks over like if he was on a horse. That's basically how it makes it show.
Yeah, he kind of rides off into the sunset, and then that's. And then he kind of gives a dramatic stare, and kind of the camera pans out, and then we cut to credits. Oh, I should mention it, like, you know, while this is happening, this kind of like riding off into the sunset, we get that the theme from the movie, and the movie does have a fun score by Alan Silvestri, who is probably best known for his scores for the likes of Back to the Future and the Avengers, a whole bunch of other stuff. So that's good. And the end credits ends with the Dread song by The Cure, famous British goth band. Actually, it must be mentioned that, like a lot of 90s movies, the soundtrack for this is just great. There might be a lot wrong with this movie, but the soundtrack is not one of them. You know, it's got Cure, it's got, you know, like White Zombie, it's got the British dance group Left Field. It's got a whole bunch of great stuff, you know. That's a great thing about 90s movies. All of them had great soundtracks. It's not kind of as popular now to do that, I don't think. Like, you know, the official soundtrack, you know, motion picture soundtrack is like,
But that's a whole nother conversation. I read because it's so expensive now to, I guess, get the rights for songs. That's why they avoid it. Like they, you know, where they used to have the whole, beautiful soundtracks. And yeah, I forgot about The Cure being one of them. So as the credits were rolling, I was, you know, sitting up from my seat and going to grab something. I'm like, wait a minute. That's The Cure. What are they doing on here?
Yeah. Apparently the end song was originally going to be done by the Manic Street Preachers.
Okay.
But yeah, their original singer went missing. And was never seen again. Presumed dead, unfortunately. But and then that kind of derailed. That for them, and you know, like they obviously like regrouped and you know made a whole lot more music afterwards. But and then The Cure swooped in and did that song, Dread song, which pretty good yeah. song.
No,
I mean, The Cure are a great band, so I'm like yeah. And that really is it. That is pretty much all we've got to say on Judge Dredd. Unless you have anything else to add, Craig.
No, I think I added it all in the beginning. I think, that was the issue. And we kind of had the same issue with Demolition Man, I mean, which is better, but that there's so much to talk about in the beginning because there's so much world building. And then after that, everything kind of becomes this, like, rapid pace, quick blur of like
it just kind of throws out everything. Like Demolition Man at least retains some of that identity throughout the movie, whereas this movie is just like just throws everything out. And it's just like and then there's going to be this subplot, and then we're going to introduce the Angel Gang because like they're famous from the comics, but then we're going to kill them off in 5 minutes, and then the clones, and like more Rico stuff, and it's a lot. But that is just our thoughts on Judge Dredd. Yeah. Please be sure to give us your thoughts, and please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Yeah, listen to us wherever you get podcasts. And but that's all for this time. That's all from me, Scott, and all from Craig.
Yep. And court's adjourned.
Court's adjourned. And it just leaves me to say we will see you next time when the two of us will be talking about another film from 1995. It is Sylvester Stallone and Antonio Banderas. in Assassins. But until then, see ya!